The connection between this passage from John and the passage from the book of Revelation is this business of witness. The Greek word, of course, is martyr. So Jesus came to witness to the truth of God. That witness takes a very odd form. Scholars have been pointing out for probably millennia that one of the unique things, one of the most important things that Jesus did is what, so strangely, to borrow a phrase from Nietzsche, is to transvalue all values. Namely, to set all values on their head. To radically redefine what we mean by such things as authority, for example. Power, love, hope. And after all these centuries, I've been haunted by this for the last few weeks, preparing for this class. I think we still don't get it. We really do not get it. Because when we hear talk about power or authority or love, we still recast it in the same tired, familiar terms in which we understand power and authority. Power, of course, is Realpolitik. That wonderful German phrase, which just means something we all know. Might makes right. Might makes right. And I think we have not begun even to understand the radicality of Jesus' vision. I mean, if you look at the way the church operates in the world, you look at the condition of the world. You look at the example of those who call ourselves Christian. I mean, Jesus' redefinition of all these things stand in starkest contrast to the way we behave, I think. So I've been trying to figure out some kind of entree into the kingship of Jesus. And I'd like to make this as a proposition, which I hope to develop over the course of the Sundays of Advent, which start next week, of course. We start from a fundamental understanding in the light of Jesus of who we human beings are. Karl Rahner said this decades ago, that theology is theological anthropology. Theology is a way of understanding the reality of human life in the light of God. Well, what emerges from that radical shift of perspective, and I can't say often enough how profoundly radical it is. So I'd like to propose that the God's eye view of us human beings is that we are, before we are anything else, we are fragile. If we were anything else, we are fragile. Which just means breakable. We are creatures who are breakable. And I don't think it's until we get to that kind of understanding that we can begin to get any grasp on this notion of the kingship of Christ. I mean, there's an intimation of it in this famous passage from John. My kingdom is not from this world. And what does it mean if Jesus' kingdom were from this world? Then there would be violence. My followers would fight, would struggle against this massive injustice. But I don't put the world together that way. Rather, I am silent and simply absorb your violence. And the reason I do it, I think, and the more I thought about this, the more certain I am it is true, because Jesus knew about the fragility of us human beings. How did that play out? Well, it had the privilege of having 8 grandkids, every one of which I've gone to see in the hospital shortly after their birth and held them in my arms. If there's anything that should convince us of the fragility of human beings, of human life, it's that experience of holding this totally helpless reality in our arms. We're undone by it, I think. But this is what I think the great metaphor for all of human life is. This extraordinary delicacy, this ability to be hurt, to be broken. And moreover, as I look at my own life, I think that's exactly what underlies all kinds of things about me. Perhaps I am unique in this, but I doubt it. When I go back over my life and think about some of the most intense, affective, effective experiences in my life, I think of those times when I have been violated. Certainly there are good times. But what seems to endure, what seems to exercise formative power on me, are those times that I can make a list right now at this moment of when I have been oppressed and violated as a human being, when I have been wounded, when I have been broken. And the usefulness of this way of looking at things, I think, is spelled out when we try to account for who we are as so-called adults. I think that the fundamental response that we have to ourselves and to each other, underlying everything else, is fear. I think it takes a long time and great patience and great quiet to recognize that that's what dynamizes much of my life. My defensiveness. My need to be first. My self-protection. My cowardice. And I think that all of that is simply the reflex of this fragility having been violated by all these other people who are driven by fear and a sense of competition. That somebody get ahead of me. That I lose something that I ought to be able to lay proper claim to. I recommend to you that you reflect on your own lives to see if this has any kind of validity. Because it seems to me it's the thing that makes Jesus emerge in his own full reality. Jesus as the ultimate expression of God's reaction to us, fragile human beings, which is tenderness. That great scene when Jesus is talking to James and John and they see somebody else casting out demons in Jesus' name. He said, "Listen, Lord, shall we come down and call lightning and thunder on them?" That's our response. Somebody's going to get ahead of me. Therefore, they must be violated. They must be got rid of. Why do we do that? Why do we do that so consistently? And we can't just point to the 35 wars constantly raging on the earth where we're happily murdering each other. All you have to do is look at the breakfast table or the cafeteria at King's or here on the West Wall Street. The church. This great fear-driven reflex, which I think explains 98% of our behavior and the condition of the world. The kingship of Jesus is another example of the same thing. I think we have profoundly misimagined what the kingship of Jesus is. It's majesty, it's royalty, it's dominion, it's power to oppress, to affect one's own will. That's not it. That's not it at all. So I hope during Advent to try to spell this out for myself and for you. But I'd like to finish by suggesting two images. Because what we're called for is a radical conversion of our imaginations. How do we imagine God? How do we imagine ourselves? How do we imagine the world? Because that's the world we really live in. That's the world that determines the way we operate. The way we imagine the world. As an alien, threatening, menacing place. I love Byzantine iconography. Everybody's seen those astonishing paintings. An iconostasis in a Greek church, you've seen them all over. And more and more in the light of what I've been saying today, they disturb me. I think they are a falsification of the image of Jesus. That is, the most pervasive image in all of Byzantine iconography is the figure of Jesus sitting on a throne, often enough holding a book, hand raised in blessing. But his face all but expressionless, immobile, remote. If you get a chance, Google the images of Christ as the Greek word is pantokrator, the ruler of all, the ruler of all. And you see that and say, by God, that's exactly the way it should be. No, that's the way. Tsar Nicholas II or Joseph Stalin or Mao Zedong might be depicted as a ruler. The way we typically depict rulers. With, it seems to me, very little responsiveness to our fragility. Judgment, control, that I can understand, because that's the world I live in. And that's the image of God that I predict unto Jesus. But this is a great revolutionary thing of Jesus. And so I'd like to suggest an alternate image of Jesus. Also from the field of art. If any of you know those astonishing portraits of the great Rembrandt of Jesus, I suggest you Google them too. This tenderness in the face of Jesus, this mobility, seems clearly by his face to be reaching out with a hand to me. And he's not alone in the artistic area. There are those painful multiple portraits that the great French artist George Rouault made of Jesus. Jesus suffering. And I think Rouault did that over and over again. He said, I want to paint a face of Jesus so powerful that somebody will just see it and be converted. And to what are they converted? This extraordinary wounded face. Veronica's veil. And then another one I've been casting around. In the Cathedral of Amiens, there is a figure of the crucified Jesus called Le Beau Christ, the beautiful Christ. To look at that figure, just as to look at the Rouault portraits, to look at what Rembrandt did with the figure of Jesus, you begin to get at least an inkling of how different we envision Jesus. No thrones, no scepters, no crowns, no books. This extraordinarily compassionate face staring out at me. trying to reach me in the fragility that I want to deny is certainly suppressed in most of my living. And why, I'll leave you with a question then, why in God's name are we so wary of life, so suspicious of each other? No matter how many layers of politesse or etiquette or good form we impose upon that, the politesse will take us only so far until the point where we think we are being threatened, where my turf is being invaded, where my selfhood is in danger. We live in the world of realpolitik. What Jesus is doing for those who were struck by this man is to say, that's the absolute wrong way. It's the absolute wrong way of understanding ourselves and the world. Because it's God who made us these fragile creatures.